The Secrets of Star Wars is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
I am Emily Swallow, also known as the Armorer on The Mandalorian, and I'm just giving a little shout out to the Secrets of Star Wars podcast because this is the way.
Hello there.
It's a power that Jedi have that lets them control people and make things float.
Impressive. Every word in that sense was wrong.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
That's not how the Force works.
Force is with me, and I am with the Force, and I fear nothing.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
Hi, I'm Robert King, and you're listening to The Secrets of Star Wars, where we look at the deeper themes and meanings found in the stories and characters in that galaxy far, far away. We're still talking about the Bad Batch. This week, Episode 8, Bad Territory. Joining me on the panel are Catherine Laffrey, whose name I can't say for some reason, but welcome back, Catherine.
Good to be here.
And Thomas Salerno, whose name I managed to get out the first try. Good to have you here, Thomas.
Thanks so much, Robert. Great to be here.
Oh, man. So we'll, of course, be talking through all the events of the episodes. Here's your spoiler warning. But in Episode 8, Bad Territory, our old pirate contact Fee contacts the Bad Batch, reporting that bounty hunters have been looking for M-count targets. This is the, you know, we're trying to figure out why everyone's after Omega, why the Empire, anyway, is after Omega. And it has something to do with these M-count targets. And so the Batch wants to figure out what they are. Hunter and Wrecker decide they need to go looking outside, and they find Fennec Shand, hoping that she might have some information. And she agrees to help, but she wants them to work for her. So they have to go with her on a side quest to track down Siler Saris in the midst of a swamp, because why not? So while they are off tracking down this other bounty hunter for Fennec, Crosshair and Omega are left on Pabu, and Crosshair is not able to resolve the problem of his shaking hand. And Omega has some ideas that might help him out. It was, you know, a fun, before we started recording, what did you call it, Thomas? Like an adventure of the week kind of episode?
Adventure of the week. Yeah. It kind of reminded me of like an old school sci-fi, like for me, old school, meaning like 90s, early 2000s sci-fi series. Like, you know, I was a big fan of Stargate, and there would be episodes like this all the time where there'd be some adventure they'd go on, but it would also advance, have some elements in it that advance the main plot. But I liked what you said, Robert, also in calling it a side quest. This was very much an RPG side quest. You know, Fennec is the quest giver. You're going to take out this guy, you know, and there's a small mini boss at the end that you fight. And so this is very much a story of that kind. Yeah.
I love the way when they actually arrived at the bounty hunter's lair, Hunter and Wrecker get off the boat, and Fennec is clearly staying with the boat. And I think it was Wrecker turns back to her and says, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "I'm the lookout." It's like, "Oh, so we do all the work and you get all the credit." And she's like, "Yep, you figured it out."
Oh, yeah.
It's okay, Wrecker, but you get to keep the XP, though.
Yeah. Oh, man. I am a huge Fennec Shand fan, so I was really happy to see her back and conniving and you know, working all sides of the problem and you know, getting as much out of it every possible way she can. She's just great.
Yeah, always in control, always smooth talking. Mm-hmm. It's like never panics.
We never did find out what that what deal she was trying to make with that Rodian guy. Right? He kind of walks off and we never hear anything more about that.
It was clearly not as interesting to her as the possibility of getting the Bad Batch to owe her something.
Mm-hmm.
It made me think about Rebels, though.
Oh, yeah?
They had a couple different Rodians in there. Because you had Ezra Bridger's friend who ended up, you know,
yes,
half computerized brain. But yeah, it's kind of made me go, wait a minute, you know, where's this guy going and who's he working for and what's his deal? You know, there's got to be a little Empire scheme in there.
Possibly. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I would love to see a whole sideshow just on Fennec Shand and her adventures. Yeah, she would be a fascinating one to see because her loyalties are so, you know, up for grabs. She's kind of, I think what's happened since the Boba Fett show dropped and just kind of completely changed my understanding of the character of Boba Fett. I think Fennec Shand has kind of taken Boba Fett's place in the Star Wars ecosystem in my mind.
It's like the ruthless bounty hunter who's, you know, out for themselves and
yep. Yeah, completely amoral. But maybe you never know. Chance for conversion somewhere in there.
There always seems like this a little underlying, you know, maybe I'll do the right thing if I need to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the only bounty hunter we've seen who's completely amoral is Cad Bane.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just in it for the money, you know.
Yeah, he always seemed to show up as an antagonist, though, and... Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that's why I never clicked with him in the same way I'm clicking with Fennec Shand, because she sometimes is an antagonist, sometimes she's an ally, and you know, so you really can see her like from several different angles.
Yeah, she's a very interesting character that way. And I also enjoy the bounty hunters when they're more complex than just, you know, it's just essentially another henchman for the bad guys.
Yeah. But we're getting, I mean, we kind of just like jumped right into the very middle of the episode.
Yeah.
Like at the beginning of the episode, I thought there were some really interesting dynamics about, you know, it was, they got some information from Fee.
A collector of what goods?
Yes. A pirate. She's a pirate. That was great.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Hunter and Wrecker are the ones going off on the mission. Omega really wants to go. Crosshair, I don't know. He doesn't really want to go, but he doesn't really want to stay. He just isn't. He wants to be grumpy, and he's good at it. So, you know, do what you're good at.
He kept his gear on, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what did you think? I mean, I thought there was a lot of interesting stuff with, you know, Omega wanting to go on the mission, which of course she always does. But Crosshair, like what? Crosshair trying to figure out what he wants. You know, he wants healing. He wants at least like the physical healing. He wants to get his skill back with his rifle. But there's also this sense, like this bigger question looming, I think. And
I think he's struggling because physically his sniper skills are hurting and he doesn't know how to be anything but a sniper. And so that makes him a loner, but you've got a little dog, Batcher following you around all the time. You know, she is sensing him with all of his emotions. I love the way that Batcher works in as kind of an emotion detector as far as the audience goes. If you watch her carefully and the way she responds to, especially Crosshair, it's interesting. And it was funny because Omega, you know, is like, oh, we're going to try something and you're not going to like it. And he's like, I don't like anything. But at the same time, he looked right at Batcher, and Batcher yep. just kind of like panting and looking at him like, oh, I love you.
Yeah.
And yeah, you could tell there's a little softness in his look. He knew that there is some things he likes.
Despite himself.
Yes.
Well, and he's also like a completely a fish out of water. I mean, who's Fee and who's I mean, I think he was asking who's Fennec Shand too.
Yeah.
And yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like, who are all these people? What are we doing? And it's like, you've missed a lot.
Yeah. And you've been to really Kashyyyk.
Oh yeah. Right.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Crosshair is like, it's kind of the B plot of the episode, but it's, mm-hmm. I think it's the heart plot of it. And
I have to backtrack and say one thing though.
Sure.
Even though it's been probably like 5 or 6 months since Tech fell, Fee had such a hard crush on that man. The way that she just kind of said Tech was the brains of the operation or whatever. It was just kind of like, okay, she's either covering up what she really feels, or does she not really have those feelings? Because I'm sorry, I had those two like shipped off and married in the first season.
That also struck me as a bit odd. Yeah, I noticed that. I was like, oh, okay.
Just how
kind offhanded of, it was.
Yeah, the Fee seems completely unaffected.
Yeah.
I mean, do we know? I mean, it's been some months at least.
Well, maybe, from the ticks on the wall, we know it's been at least 5 months.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Different people deal with breakups.
I mean, that's
with
true.
Stress in different
that's
ways.
True. Yep.
And I mean, it's not like their relationship ever actually connected.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, it did.
I mean, she had gotten to the point where he actually understood that she wanted a relationship.
Hey, they did watch a sunset. So,
oh, there you go.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm the forever romantic.
No, I understand that. Yeah, I have, you know, I didn't particularly ship those two, but I have shipped both Star Wars and out of Star Wars couples in the past. So I definitely get that.
I mean, the show was absolutely shipping them.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not a stretch to, you know,
I felt like that was the first time she said said Tech instead of a nickname.
Yeah. Brown Eyes. It was right.
Which I was like that. Yeah. I think that's what threw me off more than anything else. Because quite honestly, I think my husband and I for the last 30 plus years go by our nicknames with each other more than our real names. So when we say each other's real name, it's like, oh, what's wrong?
Yeah. It's like when mom uses your middle name.
Yes. I was only Thomas John if something had gone terribly wrong.
So I think what we can speculate is that Fee is mad at Tech for having abandoned her then.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Because she's like, Tech?
There you go. You fixed it for me, Robert. Thank you.
I'm here to help. Oh, man. So Fee seems to be getting over her difficulties, and Crosshair is struggling with his... My first impression when Omega, well, when, oh gosh, and now I'm forgetting the medical droid's name.
AZ?
Yes, thank you. Suggested that, there was no medical explanation, and Crosshair's, immediate, reaction was, are you saying it's all in my head?
Right.
And you know, and, I mean, I think we've all seen that it's a lot more complex than that. But yeah, I mean, can we put a diagnosis on this? Can we call this PTSD? Do we have enough of the dots to connect there?
I definitely think that's what they're aiming at. How, you know, accurate it is to people's lived experience is, you know, an open question, but I definitely think that's what they're trying to, they're trying to raise the issue of someone who's gone through a traumatic event and now is having difficulty processing it, both internally and I feel like that internal struggle is manifesting externally in his tremor.
Yeah.
And he seems to lash out the most whenever anyone asked, what happened to you? Tell us what was done to you. That's when he seems to like really lash out the most or the hand get twitchy. So, and then even having it get, you know, the hand shaking after they were talking with Fee.
Right. Because
it's like, wait a minute, they lost Tech when they were trying to figure out how to get to Crosshair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like,
And I liked what Hunter said to Omega, you know, you've got to convince him to get this looked at because ignoring it won't make it go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was it when they lost Tech rescuing him? Is that when the tremor began?
I don't know when he learned about that. Yeah, I can't remember.
No, he had the tremor when he was still with Omega, but had she told him everything by then about Tech and everything? I don't know. Possibly, but
yeah. I
know he had the tremor when he was still there.
He didn't have the tremor when he shot the Imperial officer.
No, he did not.
He was right on target with that.
Yeah.
So maybe because he's, you know, reacting to, you know, what happened to you? Maybe they're implying that something happened that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Like a specific, I mean, there are so many traumas that you can point to in his entire life. But maybe they're implying a specific event that happened on Tantus.
Yeah, and they haven't gone deep into the room where he and a couple others were walking out of, where you saw another one of those special, you know, born identity guys.
Yep.
So it's like, yeah, and he did mention that he was just too, what did he say? Too
defective.
Defective, yes, yeah. to become one of them. So there's something that went on in that room, I think, that really took him over the edge. Okay, yeah. Happier note.
On a happier note, hey, we defeated the swamp, you know, the space gators.
Right? Let's go, you know, fishing for gators.
Oh, man. I mean, that was such a fun kind of, on a podcast about Casablanca recently, and who was it? I think it was Umberto Eco was talking about Casablanca and said that it was, you know, one or two cliches is annoying and distracting. All the cliches all at once becomes iconic and a gateway to greater depth. And the swamp adventure kind of felt like all the cliches all at once. And it was fun and exciting and gave opportunities to like see, you know, new sides of Hunter and Wrecker, even though, you know, you think you've seen everything with these guys.
And a jet powered pontoon boat. Come on.
Yeah.
They've been more like, they've been showing us more boats in Star Wars recently, which is like a sort of vehicle they've shied away from in the past, because I'm not sure they knew how to make them work in Star Wars. But what they've done is kind of, you know, these sort of hydrofoil sort of almost land speeders, but on water, I think really works. I like that.
With a hydrofoil. So it's
with still, a hydrofoil. Yeah.
That's
We had the boat in the Mandalorian during the deadliest catch sort of incident, you know, and on that planet. And then we have this. Yeah. And I loved the gators. I love because I love creatures in Star Wars. I'm a big fan of creature design. And it's like, okay, they were almost a little too gatory, but I think they did enough to them where I was like, okay, that's a cool design. I like it. You know,
yeah, they definitely still had the gator head shake when you got you something in their mouth. So
yes.
Mm-hmm. I liked the, you know, oh, we've got so many of these mines to disarm, and you know, the Fennec Shand is like, you know, if we go this way, we'll have the element of surprise. You know, if we try to go around, that's just what they'll be expecting. So we can't do that.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not sure I agree with your logic, but okay, like,
yeah. But the water of the swamp was really fascinating to me. I mean, the color of it and the, you know,
clearly polluted
and or some kind of alien, like algae, fungus, something.
Because they said, like, there. The air was so polluted that if you didn't wear a rebreather, the toxicity levels are so much that you would die. So I was like, yeah, I was almost interpreting it as some kind of weird oil slick or some chemical contaminant in the water. But yeah, it could have been algae or two or whatnot.
Yeah, both and maybe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And like every swamp, there was a mosquito. Fennec was waving one away.
Yeah, really? I missed that. Yeah. Oh, wait. No, you were right. I did see that. And I was good. It started making me think about like the entomology of, of Star Wars. Like, are bugs just the same all over the galaxy? Or are there different kinds of flies and mosquitoes on different planets?
And do they eat, you know, do they suck the blood of different kinds of, you know, is there anybody who's immune to space mosquitoes?
Yeah.
We're in a swamp like that. What were the leeches like? I mean,
yeah, I mean
expecting like from Avatar The Last Airbender, the elbow leeches, you know, those giant leeches that just attach your elbows.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, honestly, if I were going to be a specially genetically modified clone to work as a soldier, I would very much want space mosquito immunity as part of my genetic modification.
I liked that we got to see Wrecker employ his skills as a demo expert to disarm the mines.
Not just an expert, the best.
The best.
The best. Yeah.
Because normally we just see him smash stuff or blow stuff up. And it was, you know, as a kind of ordnance disposal, you know, kind of task. It was interesting to see that in operation.
Yeah. And speaking of bugs, Siler Saris, the kind of praying mantis shaped creatures. Have we seen anything like that before? I mean, the
I think so.
Oh gosh, I'm just blanking on all the names tonight. Geonosis, the Geonosians.
Okay.
They're kind of bug formed, but I don't think they're quite the same creatures as Siler Saris is.
No, he had full on like mandibles and the faceted eyes. You know, he was much more insectoid than even the Geonosians are.
Yeah,
and he actually used praying mantis tactics for fighting.
Yeah.
So what they say is that a praying mantis, when it's hunting, it camouflages itself and waits for its prey to be vulnerable before it pounces. So he was hiding in the rafters, and oh my gosh, man, the first time I saw that kind of freaked me out a little. It was like, oh, first of all, bugs, praying mantis. I actually had my nephew was studying at Michigan State University, and he went into forestry and wildlife. He works in Yellowstone and places now. but he was doing a thing on bugs. And so he sent me a message. He's like, hey, if you find any of these, send me a list. I need it. Sure enough, I had a huge praying mantis in my yard. And he was like, get that thing in a cup, put it in your freezer. I'll come pick it up. I'm like, what? You want me to put it what in my freezer? Mm-hmm. I was like, and it was a big one. It was bigger than my hand. I was like,
in my area, and I don't know if this is across the country thing, but at least where I live, praying mantises are protected, and you're actually like, you're not supposed to kill them because they dispose of other insect pests.
Yes, they do take care of a lot of insect pests. If they get big enough, they'll go after rodents and things too.
Oh wow!
I've seen some like 4 inchers or ones that are even bigger than that. They can at least I think to little kid me, it looked like it was 4 inches. Maybe that, maybe I was exaggerating it in my mind, but yeah, they can get pretty big.
Oh yeah.
I seem to live in the part of the country that is fit for human habitation.
Come on. No snakes or scorpions or something scary like that.
Nope. No real. We are the top of the food chain here. Oh, man.
You have to come see a Midwest mosquito because the one on Star Wars didn't even show up in the screen.
Yeah, it's like barely a speck.
Silas also had that thing where he could spit that kind of sticky substance he got all over. Was it Hunter or Wrecker? One of them, I think it was Wrecker, on the face mask. Yeah.
And oh my gosh, how many stun shots did he need with that exoskeleton?
Dude, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
A lot.
Like a dozen. Yeah. This is a great skill set for a bounty hunter. You know, you're tough, you're sneaky, you're able to get places other people aren't able to get. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see why this would be a valuable bounty hunter, and why Fennec Shand would be wary of going in alone. Yeah.
And what did they say? He had double crossed the Haxian brood, right?
That
was what he was wanted for. Yes. And I remember they are the criminal syndicate who showed up in Jedi Fallen Order, if I remember rightly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, just good, clean adventure.
Yep.
It good to see Hunter tracking. We've seen much more of Hunter tracking this season.
Yeah, like I said at the top, it seemed to me very kind of like the kind of science fiction that I remember growing up with, just kind of a pretty much self-contained episode, but with threads to the wider story. And I like that a lot.
And some fun scenes. The space station where they met up with Fennec was really fascinating.
Oh, that was cool.
Yeah. I mean, the sound, the bar, of course, the bar had all the classic bar creatures that you'd see in all the other shows when there's a bar. So, and then, just the way the lighting was done and rewatching it, there was when they're first walking in, you see two kids down an alley where one's like ducking and peeking around like they're trying to pull a scam on someone. So it's just the little extras that you get in the background now. It's really layered.
Okay, I finally did find it on Wikipedia. Yes, it was the Haxian Brood that he double-crossed. So there we have an answer. What we don't have an answer to is, who is Fennec Shand working for?
I kind of think my going theory was Asajj Ventress.
Yeah.
That
The Asajj Ventress is just hanging over the entire season. It's like, you put her put her in the trailer, and then, you know, we're halfway through the season and she hasn't shown her face, and it's like, when's she going to show up? And
right. But specifically because her contact had some knowledge of the M count thing that the Empire is looking, you know, to do. And whether she's for it or against it, I could see Ventress having an interest in that.
Oh, definitely. Because that's the thing that's driving me crazy, though. There's the book with Ventress, and everybody's wondering how that's supposed to fit in, because they're supposed to honor that, but it would have all happened before this. So Ventress shouldn't even be alive is what everybody keeps saying. I haven't read the book yet, but
yeah, neither have I.
I have not read it. Yeah.
But I know they did mention, and I think it's actually in an earlier episode of Clone Wars after she was dumped by Count Dooku, that she did work with Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So that's kind of an interesting connection there. It's like
she kind of became a bounty hunter slash mercenary, at least yeah. for a while. So yeah, that's entirely plausible. Yeah. I think it was really not to get into rampant speculation, because every time I try to speculate, I'm always wrong.
But yeah, just ask me and my friends on the secrets of Middle Earth with Rings of Power. Boy, were we wrong about everything.
Yeah.
Like my March Madness brackets that were really good the first day, and then I tanked the second day. So.
Ouch. But I think they're definitely raising the question of, you know, first off, who is this bounty hunter that Fennec Shand is supposed to connect our Bad Batch boys too, and then who is it that she's working for? I mean, I think these are
two different
okay. Yeah. And the fact that she doesn't actually pay off at the end, she's all right, I'm heading off, I'll be in touch, you know, checks in the mail. I'm like, I do not trust you, Fennec Shand. If I were them, I would say, no, we're coming with you until you connect us with the person you promised. But
yeah,
I guess our clones are good trusting people. The Omega is starting to rub off on them.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I thought it was interesting seeing Omega try to teach Crosshair meditation as a way to deal with his internal struggles. And
yeah,
connecting back to the episode on Kashyyyk, you know, where I first began to suspect that there was something force related about Omega.
So this is a Jedi meditation, but it's not in a Jedi context here. And that's kind of interesting.
I mean, I'm sure the Wookiees who like taught it to her have their own, you know, spiritual traditions and ways of meditation and stuff. I'm sure, you know, like different species obviously have their own ways of connecting with the Force and spirituality. So it's interesting that she's kind of taken it from that rather than, you know, the whole Jedi structure.
Yeah.
I mean, she didn't name drop Gungi, who's a Jedi. I was glad she didn't say that he is a Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
So she knows to protect him, not saying what he was or is. And then I like that she knew that it was going to be for healing. And I mean, mm-hmm. come on, who didn't tear up just a little bit when she holds his hand? That was so sweet.
That was very nice. Yeah.
I was like, oh. So it was nice to see him, you know, soften up and like trust her. I was like, okay.
Like he's like, so what are we supposed to be doing exactly? And it's like, well, that's not the point of meditation, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Breathe. And for a sniper who's got to always keep his eyes open, she tells him, close your eyes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Very much like Luke sitting on the rock too, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice visual sort of reference.
I mean it's definitely, you know, the Jedi and a lot of the spirituality, most of the spirituality that's displayed in the Star Wars universe is pretty clearly drawn on Eastern sources. Right. So on yoga meditation, Buddhist meditation, Taoist meditation, these traditions. And it's always interesting to me that the Christian tradition of meditation is always meditation on something, right? So meditation mm-hmm. on a scripture, meditation on an event in the life of Christ, or something like that. Eastern meditation is much more that sort of emptying, and they're not necessarily opposed to each other, but they're slightly different in focus, and the idea that that the emptying sort of meditation is what's necessary to heal, to bring about the openness that Crosshair needs in order to deal with whatever trauma this is in his past.
That sort of reminds me of, like, there is in the Christian tradition this sense of you need to empty yourself of things that are unnecessary or kind of spiritual or emotional baggage, and to let God fill that void that's being left behind by the things that you're letting go of, that you're releasing, that you're emptying yourself of, that you never leave the void there. You allow God to come in and fill the void, you know? So I feel that that Crosshair needs something to fill up that, you know, what he's releasing. You know, it can't just be, well, okay, I'm free of these traumas and issues. I feel like healing too will come from him refocusing on something positive, which I think he's learning in, like, you know, as we see him softening, you know, and learning to reintegrate into his essentially family.
Well, this is what Omega is all about. You know, she's all about the positive. She's all about what is good, finding something good anywhere she looks. And that's, you know, that's what love is. That's what, you know, agape or charity is. It's seeing the good and focusing on that, encouraging it, developing it, having faith in it. That good is ultimately greater than evil.
Yeah, she's definitely reflecting the feminine genius of nurturing. How do I care for my brother? And Hunter knew that she'd be able to care for him much better than anyone else.
Yeah.
And it's like, you take care of him. You get him to figure this out. You know, it's like, he knows that she has that connection with him. They had it since the beginning. I mean, first time we saw her put her hand on his shoulder, there was always a connection there. It was just, will Crosshair drop his guard? Will he let someone in to help him? You know, and I think he's getting there.
Yeah, I continue to be amazed by just what this show is willing to explore, you know, a so-called quote unquote kid show, you know, because it's animated. And, you know, and that, you know, one of its main protagonists is a child figure. But I continue to be impressed with the Bad Batch overall, willing to tackle these more serious topics in a way that's respectful, but still, you know, integrated into a show that has fun adventure and lighthearted moments. You know, my favorite shows often do that, you know, both inside and outside of Star Wars.
Oh, gosh, I just had a flashback thought. Omega with Crosshair is like in Pretty in Pink with her. What was Molly Ringwald's character? Her name, with her dad. She was trying to, like, take care of her dad, who was sort of a recovering alcoholic after the loss of his wife. So I kind of just, wow, there you go. A little 80s flashback for you folks.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Omega herself can't be unaffected by, I mean, the trauma she has directly suffered, but also the trauma of, yeah, essentially being the caregiver for the entire Bad Batch, who, I mean, we're focusing on Crosshair here, but all of them have trauma that they're dealing with. And I mean, Wrecker is maybe in some ways the shallowest, but also the most healthy way of dealing with it, is just, you know, this is life. Move on.
Power through.
Well, she had that moment with Wrecker already when his chip started crazy. And so, yeah, she's had to work with him already and deal with him coming around going, I'm so sorry. I couldn't stop myself. So,
yeah,
that was interesting. Yeah. And maybe Batcher's a little, you know, foreshadowing of her capability as a healer.
Yeah. But, you know, yeah, she's absolutely had to work with Hunter as well, and Tech, Echo, all of that. I mean, her role has been the heart of the group and the nurturer of the group, and she's a child. You know, she may be physically older than the Batch, but in terms of maturity, she's still a child. And they have been sort of artificially matured psychologically. So it's a very difficult thing for a child to take on a nurturing role like that. And it's a kind of trauma in itself. And I wonder how that's going to impact her in the long run, assuming the Empire doesn't get to her and, you know, dissect her so that they can figure out her.
Downer.
I mean, the Empire is bad.
Yeah, they are bad.
And we definitely, I mean, we do not want them to get their hands on Omega again, because they will do bad things to her.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Lefty. I'm just going to call Dr. Hemlock Lefty from now on.
We need to, I really want to know the backstory of what's up with his hand, the one hand that he always cradles.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is there some past injury there? Is it a robotic hand? Like, what is going on with that? And I really hope they are setting Dr. Hemlock up for a spectacular demise, because I will relish every second of that when it happens.
I would be surprised if he doesn't get a massive comeuppance. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't think I've said this on the podcast before, but he, you know, he thinks he's essential to the Empire, but he doesn't realize that as soon as he's not, they'll get rid of him at the drop of a hat. And I don't think he's fully processed that,
because he knows too much.
I mean, he has this sort of tunnel vision of someone who is completely egotistical. You know, he sees what he wants to see, and what he isn't focused on doesn't exist.
Maybe for his torture they'll have him sit in a room with himself.
Yeah, maybe he'll have to do some meditation. Well, it was a short episode and a lot to talk about in it, but you know, I think we've kind of touched on what we wanted to touch on. We've got 3 episodes coming up next week.
Oh boy, yeah.
So wow. I think it's safe to call this podcast episode a little bit shorter than we normally do. Save a little extra time for next week, maybe. And just thank you for a great conversation. Some really interesting insights. For those of you who are listening, we would love to hear your insights about this episode, about the Bad Batch in general, about all things Star Wars. You can, as always, drop us a line at starwars@sqpn.com. You can reach us on Facebook at StarQuest Media. My favorite place, as always, our Discord server, very active. You can access that through our website, sqpn.com/discord. You also help our community grow whenever you subscribe or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. We're on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio, lots of others. Don't forget our YouTube channel. And I especially want to thank tonight our patrons on Patreon, who in a very direct way make it possible for us to create this podcast and all the other shows at StarQuest. In this episode, we'd especially like to thank Father Chris R., Henry C., Simon M., Elijah H., and Jonathan M. for their generous support. If any of the rest of you would like to join them in keeping our work going, please visit sqpn.com/give. So that is it for tonight. Until next time, Thomas, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Robert.
Catherine, it is always great to talk with you.
Yes, it was a good time.
And once again, I've been Robert King. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Star Wars on StarQuest.
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy, The Catholics of Oz. Find it wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/Oz.